Shortly before midnight on Saturday, the 5th of November 1910, P.C. Greenwood had barely made his way into an area in Carlisle known as West Walls when, after checking on individual premises, he came across an unlocked warehouse door at number 15. As the area was well known for beggars and vagabonds who would use the narrow streets when passing through the city, it seemed odd that someone would leave the doors to their business unlocked and at the mercy of those passing through. But out of curiosity, P.C. Greenwood turned on his lamp before opening the door, and as he crept inside the building, his attention was quickly brought to the sight of a body lying close to the bottom of some stairs directly in front of him. And upon making his way over, it was clearly obvious to the police constable that something truly horrific had occurred, as not only was blood smeared on the walls, the body at the foot of the stairs was lying slumped over on its right-hand side and also covered in blood. The constable continued to search the premises, going into every room, and after being satisfied that there was nobody else in the building, he was about to leave when he came across an axe that had been left on top of a box. Upon closer inspection, he noticed what looked like human hair, which had adhered itself to the blood that covered most of the axe. Immediately, the constable left the building and quickly summoned for assistance in the form of Chief Constable George Hill, who immediately proceeded to the scene of the murder. Alexander Norville, who was 75 years of age, was a well-known and seemingly well-liked character within Carlisle. Residing in nearby Great Corby, he had for many years carried on with a successful business as a courier, which means someone who transformed tanned hide into a supple leather needed for other craftsmen. The building he owned at number 15 West Walls was just one of three stories, which were all connected by wooden stairs. The building also overlooked the nearby railway line directly opposite. Norville was a wealthy man by all accounts, and he had owned a considerable amount of property in Carlisle and the surrounding neighbourhood. Married to his wife Alison for 54 years, together they had seven children: William, Margaret, Davina, Griselda, Alex, Archibald and Janet. But it is Archibald with whom our story today will perhaps be of the most important. When P.C. Greenwood entered number 15 West Walls, it's probably correct to assume that the last thing in his mind would be the finding of a body of an old man, whose head had been battered beyond comprehension, and who had, by all accounts, been lying in cold blood for several hours before being found. Meanwhile, P.C. Forster had made his way to number 53 Sheffield Street, the home of his son Archibald Norville, and informing him that his father had been found dead. Archibald, in a distressed tone, shouted, "Oh, my poor dad, my poor dad!" After getting dressed, as Archibald had been disturbed from his sleep, he took the keys of the workshop and accompanied P.C. Forster to the local police station where Inspector Turnbull was waiting. Upon his arrival, and although it appeared that he'd been drinking at some point late the previous evening, he was crying when Inspector Turnbull went through the events of the discovery of his father's body in the workshop. And after a short while, both Archibald and Inspector Turnbull made their way to number 15 West Walls. On the way, Archibald kept saying, "Poor old dad, he was very hard, but a good dad to me." Inspector Turnbull, speaking to Archibald, asked him if he would like the body of his father removed to his house or to the mortuary, to which he replied, "To the mortuary, I have not the convenience at home." When they arrived at the warehouse, Archibald lit a gas lamp that was situated immediately behind the front door and then proceeded to the other end of the warehouse where he lit another lamp. It was here that he noticed the axe, saying, "That axe ought not to be there, it is kept upstairs, we use it for breaking cork." The axe was lying on a leather apron on top of a barrel, covered in bloodstains, and as we have already mentioned, it had strands of hair that was matted in blood. Archibald took hold of the axe, inspecting it for a few seconds before placing it back down. Now his attention was then brought to his father's body, which was lying on his right side with his feet towards the foot of the stairs, the left foot crossing the right. At the foot of the stairs were his false teeth and a handbag, which contained an empty glass bottle, some biscuits and some cheese. His father's head and face was covered in blood, with his head lying in a pool of blood. There were also sprinklings of blood on the bottom of the stairs, as were on the walls nearby. A cap worn by his father was also lying at the bottom of the stairs. "When did you see him last?" asked Inspector Turnbull. Archibald replied, "I left him at 1:10. He was all right then." "And would he have any money on him?" "Well, yes, he had a purse of about £4, replied Archibald. Archibald then searched his father's body, removing a pocketbook from a coat pocket. It contained a quantity of papers. He then took a watch out of another pocket, and seeing it was all right, he put it back. searching the trousers of his father, he said, there's no money. Along with PC Greenwood, Archibald and Inspector Turnbull went upstairs and searched around, but finding nothing of importance and nothing being found disturbed, Inspector Turnbull left Archibald with PC Greenwood, leaving the warriors to go and fetch Dr. Hall. Just before 3 a.m, Dr. Hall, who was accompanied by Dr. Ledyard, arrived at the scene, and after making one or two examinations, both were of the opinion that Alexander Norville's death was due to the injuries to his head. The wounds would require considerable force, and they could have been inflicted by the axe that was found on the premises. They also agreed that the wounds could not have been caused by falling downstairs. Throughout the morning, many police officers had arrived at the warehouse, and public interest had meant many people had made their way to the scene, purely out of morbid fascination. At around 9:45 and inside the warehouse, Detective Inspector Pattinson had also been through and made a thorough examination, confirming what other witnesses had said. Police Constable Rawson, who accompanied Detective Inspector Pattinson, gave similar evidence. And whilst an examination of the warehouse was taking place, it seems that the police had come across some information that had given them the cause to concentrate on Archibald Norville, and as to his whereabouts on the Saturday before and after the murder of his father Alexander. And it wouldn't take them long, at around 10:40 a.m. that morning, Detective Inspector Pattinson would arrest and charge Archibald with willful murder, to which Archibald muttered under his breath, "Oof." On Monday, 7th of November, Archibald was brought before the magistrates at the town hall. And whilst the hearing was relatively short, the police would ask that Archibald be put on remand for a week, so to give them ample time to make further inquiries. The following morning, Mr. H.B. Lonsdale, coroner for the city of Carlisle, opened an inquest on the body of Alexander Norville. Evidence of identification would be made by his son-in-law, Mr. A. Campbell Brown. The coroner, in opening the inquest, said Norville came from the Scottish side of the border, but he had lived for many years in Carlisle and the surrounding neighbourhood. It would also tell the jury that inquiries had not yet been completed, but Alexander Norville seemed to have been the victim of a brutal attack by someone with a blunt instrument, and wounds found on his head were no doubt cause of his death. Information would also be given, saying how Alexander Norville was in the habit of going home on Saturday afternoons, but on this occasion he did not arrive home and was instead found dead in his warehouse. Finally, and in a macabre sense of the word, the doctors who had made a post-mortem examination of the body had cut off the head and put it in spirits of wine for preservation. The following week, and on Monday, 14th of November, Archibald Norville was brought up at the Carlisle police station and charged with the murder of his father, Alexander Norville. The chief constable again applied for remand for another week, which was granted despite strong opposition from Archibald's defence team. Mr. F.W. Holton, defending, said he objected more strongly to a remand, particularly if there was no evidence given to justify a remand. Archibald had been in custody for a week, and there was so far before the court not a single oath or statement given in evidence connecting him with the murder of his father. Holton would go on to say that this was a serious matter, which affected the liberty of Archibald, and no man should be detained in custody for any length of time without sound evidence being given to show he was in some way connected with the crime. However, his objections after a short delay would not be granted. On Monday, 21st of November, Archibald Norville would again appear in the police court. As his name was read out by Chief Constable Mr. G. Hill, Archibald, dressed in a black top coat with silk lapels and a black tie, walked into court and made his way to the dock. Whilst in deep silence, Mr. Pierce for the prosecution began to outline for the first time in public the details in which they would attempt to connect Archibald with the murder of his father, Alexander. They would talk of Archibald as being the only person employed by Alexander Norville at the time of his death, and he was earning a wage of around 30 shillings per week. Mr. Pierce would tell the court that whilst Alexander Norville was a man of extreme frugality, his son Archibald was of a different proposition. It would also go on to say that there was no indication that the crime was committed for robbery and instead was committed by a person more intimately connected to Alexander than originally thought. As for the motive being robbery, Alexander was found with a watch in his pocket and there was no indication that any of his other pockets had been rifled. The police would also state that there was no indication of anything having been disturbed for any purpose of robbery. And as for Archibald's movements on the day of the murder, he would admit that he was with his father within the warehouse as late as 1:10 p.m. on the Saturday afternoon. He then left the building expecting his father to soon follow, as he would normally be expected to catch the 1:50 p.m. train to his county home in Great Corby. The police by now had been building a picture of Archibald's whereabouts, and they were convinced he was the last man to have seen his father alive. Police Sergeant Seaton remarked on seeing Archibald outside of the warehouse between 12 and 1 o'clock on the day of the murder. He spoke to him, but Archibald snubbed him, just giving a grunt, and it was apparent that he was annoyed by something or someone. Police officials were adamant that the murder took place by 1:30 p.m. and that Archibald was seen running from the warehouse and along Calder Bridge between 1:20 p.m. and 1:30 p.m. by a witness named Peter Kelly. Kelly didn't think anything unusual in Archibald's appearance, as he knew he liked to back horses and had assumed he was running to get his money on the first race that day, which was at 1:30 p.m. "What's up?" remarked Kelly, but Archibald just ran past him, mumbling something to himself. After leaving the warehouse, Archibald made his way to the Spinner's Arms, a public house owned by George Bork. He ordered a glass of whiskey, which he drank quickly, and then went away. In the course of the afternoon, he changed his clothing and visited a number of other public houses in Carlisle, and during the evening he was seen coming away from the direction of the warehouse. A courier named Hodgson Brown, who had worked alongside Alexander Norval, would tell the jury when, in June the previous year, Archibald had left his father's business for 4 or 5 days, in consequence of a dispute over money matters. He would tell them that he had sometimes heard them both having strong words, but it was always over in a minute or two, but every now and then Alexander would threaten to close the business for good. William Jefferson, landlord of the Black Bull Inn, stated that Archibald came into his premises at around 7:55 p.m, and another witness came forward saying that they had seen Archibald at around 8:35 p.m, apparently coming from the direction of the warehouse on West Walls. Prosecuting, Mr. Pierce asked if he, Archibald, could give an explanation of being in close proximity at that time of night, or was it in order to open the door so that the murder might be discovered, which in fact did happen. Now Archibald would again be formally remanded for another week, with the understanding that a special date for the resumed hearing would in the meantime be fixed. On Monday, 5th of December, Archibald was once again and for the final time brought up on remand. Dr. Wilcox, analytical expert at the Home Office, was the main witness called by the prosecution. He stated that he had examined the working clothes of the prisoner and had found several bloodstains upon the front of the waistcoat and one on the shirt sleeve, also bloodstains on the cap belonging to Alexander Norval. The position of the stains were consistent with the theory of the prosecution that they had been the result of an attack made upon Alexander by a man with an axe. In cross-examination, Dr. Wilcox said he would not give the age of the bloodstains, nor say whether they were the stains of human blood. He also stated that if a man had cut his finger and held his finger up sufficiently long enough, the blood causing the stains would have come from that finger. Now Archibald would say to the jury that in the process of his work as a courier, there had been times that he had indeed cut his fingers and had wiped off the blood onto his clothing as well as the apron. The inquest wouldn't take long, and after examining all of the evidence, the magistrates would commit Archibald to take his trial at the Assizes in January 1911. After 2 days' trial at the Cumberland Assizes on Saturday 29th of January 1911, Archibald Norval was found not guilty of the murder of his father and was acquitted, with all charges against him being dropped. He would enter the witness box and deny that he had committed the murder, giving a long account of his movements that day. Now interestingly, he would also give an account of an incident that had taken part 18 months prior when, after travelling to Glasgow on business, he forged his father's name on a cheque. His father forgave him and lent him money with which to carry on a betting business. Details would also emerge that Archibald, besides assisting his father in the warehouse, he carried on a sideline as a bookmaker, and a bookmaker of the worst type. He took money from people on street corners, but no sooner had he taken the money, he had lost it just as quickly. In summing up, Mr. Justice Grantham said the prosecution had, in his opinion, failed to prove the prisoner's guilt, though a grave suspicion was cast on him because of the time at which the murder was committed. The bloodstains found on Archibald's shirt and apron were not enough to convict him either. Mr. Justice Grantham would also go on to say that if there was no motive for the murder, there was cause for ill will between Archibald and his father over the recent forgery of the cheque and subsequent embezzling over 2 or 3 months of his father's money. Now Archibald Norval left the court and was afterwards escorted home by a cheering crowd. So what happened next? Archibald, after being found not guilty of the murder of his father, would carry on life as normal. However, his name would soon be in the newspapers again when he would try to sue the Stanwix Bowling Club he had been a member of for many years after, it seems, they removed his name from the members list, basically expelling him from the club. This would have been a huge shock to him, as he had won multiple trophies with them. But if we are to read between the lines, it was clearly obvious that they did not want to be associated with someone who had been charged with murder, even if he was found not guilty in a court of law. Which now brings me to question a few of the things we've already spoken about. What seems strange in this case is that the police were very quick to charge Archibald with the murder of his father. After initially informing him of the crime and after visiting the warehouse where the murder took place, they charged him just a few hours later at around 10:40 a.m. So what information did they receive that pretty much convinced them that Archibald was the perpetrator of the crime? Was it because of the ill feeling his father had towards him 18 months prior and because of the scandal involving the cheque he had forged in his father's name? Was it because witnesses had seen him running away from the direction of the warehouse shortly after 1 o'clock in the afternoon? But the most puzzling aspect of this case is that the police never followed up any other clues as to who else the murderer could be if it was not Archibald. Some reports suggested that the crime was more than likely committed by a tramp who was making his way along West Walls when either entering or leaving the city, but this then makes it an opportunist crime at best. Did a tramp really come across the unarched door at number 15 West Walls, somehow make his way up the stairs undetected, pick up the axe and then go back downstairs, hide under them and then attack Alexander when he was least expecting it? It does seem highly unlikely. And if this was the case, then why wasn't his possessions taken? Yes, Archibald stated that his father was carrying some money and that it was now gone. But what I also find strange is that Archibald seems to know roughly exactly how much he was carrying on the day of the murder. Why would he know this? It just seems a strange thing to know. The police themselves even stated in court that nothing seemed to have been disturbed, which would again seem strange as, if we are led to believe a tramp had committed the murder, then surely he would have rummaged through the warehouse looking for valuables to possibly sell on. Also, the blood on Archibald's clothing. Again, why wasn't this questioned in more detail? His simple answer to having cut his fingers whilst in the process of work and rubbing them on his shirt and apron seems to have been accepted as fact. And yet we know that he changed his clothes on more than one occasion during the evening of the attack on his father. What was he hiding? Had he tried to destroy evidence? I suppose at the end of the day, the murder of Alexander Norville, which has been unsolved for over 111 years, it will never be solved, and that's something we can safely say. Was Alexander visited by someone he knew? A friend, possibly. After all, Mr. Pierce did say in court that there was no indication that the crime was committed for robbery, and instead was committed by a person more intimately connected to Alexander. So questions do remain over Archibald's involvement, and looking over the facts of the case, you do have to ask yourself, was Archibald the real killer? I'd be interested to know your thoughts on this one. So thank you very much for listening to this latest story. I do hope you enjoyed it. I'd like to know your thoughts on it. Was Archibald the real killer, and was a killer actually freed from court? Again, comment if you're listening to it on the website, comment down below and tell me what your thoughts are on this one. Please feel free to share it on social media. Links are also down below. And also, you can also follow us on social media, such as Twitter and Instagram. In the meantime, as I always say, take care, look after yourselves, and I will be back soon with another tale from the past.